Well, maybe they'll come up with rim shot nice.
Yeah.
And then you
rim shot friendly.
There you go. You use your bass drum to jump, and the snare shoots bubbles. Who knows? All right, pal. Well, come back on for the
council.
Yeah. Who even knows what we're going to talk about? I don't know. Okay. Talk to you soon. Hold on. Bye.
Bye.
Kyle Von Kubik. Kyle Von Kubik is also handling our We Talk Games Twitter, and he has a new video game related question up there almost every day. So follow us now. All right, Keith, I'm putting on my shades. I got to get in my cool hipster mode. Let's open it up to Gaijin Games and Alex Noisy. Santa Cruz! Alex Noisy. Go!
Yo.
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 Yo. Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Yo.
Alex, thank you for joining us here on We Talk Games this fine day.
Dude, you're so welcome. I like to talk games. You like to talk games. We like to talk games.
Now, Alex, usually I have a stack of 30, 40, 60, 90 questions in front of me. But today, I'm going to make it easy for you. Very, very special. In fact, in front of me, I have absolutely zero questions.
Oh, so I guess we're done. It was a pleasure being on the show.
Let me clarify. I actually have one request.
Okay.
And that's all I really have before me, one request. So, Alex, please tell me everything.
Everything, you say?
Yes. That's all you have to do.
All right. Well, at the beginning, I was dead, and then I became alive.
Yes.
As many of us do. And I learned what it was like to play Smurfs Rescue in Gargamel's Castle, or whatever that game is called, on the Atari 2600. And I was better at that than my friend Barry was. He couldn't jump over the fences, and I could. And that became the beginnings of my love affair with video games. And from then, I played Metroid in the dark, and that's what gave me glasses. But it was worth every second of the rest of my life when I have to wear glasses just to play that game. And then I went to college and got smart. And after I got smart, I realized that getting smart isn't going to pay the bills. So I had to make things that would distract people from life to pay the bills. And that's how I ended up making video games.
I see, I see. Now you speak about Smurfs. Have you ever played the import from the Europe of Smurf for the Sega CD?
You know, I have not. Is this something I need to do? Should I take notes here?
If you played the 2600 version or the older versions, I think it's pretty much the same with nicer graphics. But yeah, you still have trouble getting over a fence.
I gotcha. Yeah, those Smurfs, they're only three apples tall, you know? A fence is a major obstacle.
It really is. And to jump ahead incredibly, it reminds me of the steps in Beat Runner. But I'm getting way ahead of myself.
Well, Bit Trip Runner is, I think you're right. Those stairs are the Smurf fences of the Bit Trip world.
You really have to understand that rhythm. But once you do, it's okay.
Yeah. So,
but initially, you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing on this rhythm.
Just wait till you get to the stairs paired with the space meatballs.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Yeah. Level 3.
And you also say that you wanted to create things to distract people from life or take away their time. And
sure. Steal it.
Right. And when I had Ralph Baer on, I don't know if you ever heard of that guy.
Of course. He played Bit Trip Beat. We have a photo to prove it.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, he took big offense to me even remotely implying that video games are some sort of distraction or way to draw us out of life or or a waste of time. Oh, well, maybe that's how. Maybe because I called it a waste of time. I definitely don't think it is a waste of time.
No, I think certain games are probably a waste of time, and I've played them too.
And sometimes you go back to them.
Oh yeah, and sometimes we do. Like just the other night, I tried to pick up Princess Tomato in the Salad Kingdom for the NES and play through that.
Sure, sure.
And I realized that's not the greatest game, and so I stopped.
And what an odd release for the Wii Virtual Console.
The BitTrip series?
No, the Princess Tomato.
Oh, they released it on the Virtual Console? I have the cartridge. So.
I see.
Yeah, it's funny. I love the Virtual Console, but I don't own hardly any Virtual Console games because I've got a very extensive video game library at home, you know, with all the systems.
Sure, sure. I have a pretty fair collection. I did sell off a lot of my NES games when I was trying to make a living doing podcasts, and that's how well that worked out. Restaurant Panic. Restaurant Panic was a big seller. That I got a lot of loot for that one.
Nice.
Yes. Good. But even though I have a lot of systems, especially TurboGrafx, that's my number one favorite system, I guess I'm too lazy to, you know, break out my cartridges and CDs and everything else, and I can't help myself but picking up VC games just because of the convenience.
Yeah, well, it's a great service.
It's really neat. And I think it shows that people don't mind paying for something that's legit. I mean, I think the reason that most of us do emulation is because they're not available for me to legitimately buy at a reasonable price. So,
Well, that's one of the things I was really excited about with the Virtual Console is it is a legit way to get it, to get the games. Like, for instance, I think it's Blazing Lasers for the TurboGrafx. I don't own that game, so I bought it on the Virtual Console. And that's nice because it was like, what are TurboGrafx games? Like 500 points?
$5.
Something. Yep. Yeah, so that's better than buying a copy of Blazing Lasers on eBay.
Now, Alex, you worked, let's get back to you. You worked at Lucas for a while, I guess.
I did, yeah, for about 7 years, I think.
Wow! Okay.
Just crazy.
Were you there when Noah Falstein was there?
The name sounds familiar, but I don't think I was there at that time.
Okay, gotcha.
I started in 1997 at LucasArts, and that was my first job in the industry. And I started as a tester, which was very, very exciting for me. And in fact, the first game I was testing was Jedi Knight, Mysteries of the Sith. And of course, it's a PC first-person shooter, and I'm a console gamer, always have been, and I don't really like first-person shooters, so I wasn't good at it. I was very unfamiliar with the controls, and my first day, they put me at this desk, which had the biggest television, like the biggest monitor in the whole test department, up high, like on this creepy pedestal where everyone could see me playing. It was like, it was the craziest thing ever, and I was just, I felt like such a chump because I could not play that game very well at all.
Indoctrination by fire, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I was at LucasArts for a long time. I liked it a lot.
Very good. Now, did you ever have any insight to George Lucas's plans to destroy pinball?
You know, George and I used to have secret meetings in the dark rooms to talk about that exact thing.
Finally!
It was all me, I'd like to say.
Oh, this is great!
You found
I've been
it.
Waiting for this. Yes. Wow, no, all those months finally pay off.
Yeah, exactly. No, George is behind a fortress. You know, he's like Superman in the Fortress of Solitude, you know.
I see.
The very brief dealings I had with George were polite, yet brief.
I see. Now, when did you strike out on your own, then?
I actually tried to strike out on my own right after LucasArts and start Gaijin Games back then, but I didn't know anything, you know, and I had a team together and we were all kind of ready to go if the stars aligned, but they didn't. So I retreated back into the video game corporate envelope or fold, if you will, and I took a job at Activision as a producer.
Oh, that's interesting.
And yeah, so I went from, at LucasArts, I left there, I was in a design role at LucasArts by that time, and I left to take a producer role at Activision to see if I could learn a little bit more about the industry before trying to start my own company again. Always kind of thinking that I would. And after that, I jumped to a small independent developer called Santa Cruz Games here in Santa Cruz, California. And after a short stint there of, I don't know, a few years, I decided, okay, I think I know enough. I think I can do this. I got to find the right people, and we got to go for it. And I found Chris and Mike, my partners in crime, and we started out in 2008, I want to say. So we're almost 2 years old now.
Wow. And accolades since your beginning there. In fact, I don't know if you know about the Wii, but when you go to the virtual store, I mean, when you go to the Wii Shop channel, you can actually scroll left and right. I just found this out recently, even though I've been reviewing downloadable arcade at home for quite a while. And I saw
it's a new feature.
I see. I saw you are Bit Trip Beat is an acclaimed game. So that's fantastic.
Oh, really?
Yep. Critically acclaimed.
I checked that like 2 days ago, and I didn't see that. I'm going to check that this morning, okay, right after this podcast.
Yeah,
that's exciting news.
Yeah, it was there 2 weeks ago. So.
Oh, okay, great.
Speaking of Bit Trip Beat, and I'm so thankful that, who was it, Nintendo, when they wrote about, I think, Bit Trip Runner, they called Commander Video Captain Video.
Well, I know.
Guess they're big fans of the Honeymooners or something, or that series.
Yeah, no.
And I'm kind of happy that a big company like Nintendo did it, because I think when I try to allude that we were going to have you on a show in my downloadable arcade at home breakout bonus level minisode, I think I called it Beat Trip Beat. That's what I called it. So, you know, it's just a tongue twister for me.
It is kind of a tongue twister.
That's part of the fun.
Yeah,
and the charm.
Exactly.
Now, starting with Bit Trip Beat, I think your games followed a separate branch of the evolutionary tree of video games. How did you reset on what you were going to give to the people in this Bit Trip series?
What do you mean? Like from the beginning? How did we decide upon all of this or what?
Well, it's sort of like an alternative Earth or something where some technologies didn't progress while others did. Because, you know, right, like we had Tom Hewlett from Konami on and he brought back Rocket Knight. And that's like 2D on top of a 3D game. But your creations are like 3D on top of a 2D world. But the 3D looks like it belongs there. It's not like the opening video of a Saturday morning cartoon or something where you have traditional hand-drawn animation and then all of a sudden you got the CG bit thrown in there awkwardly. It really all goes together. So,
yeah.
But it doesn't seem to follow the progression that other companies have. Like, okay, we're going forward in technology. We put this in here. We add to it. We do this. Yours seem to have reset from zero, and then just followed a completely different mindset, a completely different blueprint.
Yeah, well, you're definitely right on the money there. At the beginning of the series, we were talking about, you know, this sort of severely retro look we wanted, where a lot of quote-unquote retro games kind of go back to the NES style, and we wanted to take it even further back than that. I have a lot of classic games at home. I really like them. They're, you know, they're super blocky. The Atari 2600 or the Odyssey, you know, or the Bally Astrocade or whatever. We wanted to take it to that extreme, but at the same time, we realized that doing exactly that would be kind of lame. Like, no one wants to play games that are quite that crusty. So what we wanted to do, what we set out to do, was create the games that you imagined in your head as you were playing these older games, like back in the day. Like, so for instance, I got Breakout, you know, when I was a kid, and I looked at the box art, and the box art blew my mind. You know, oh my God, you're this astronaut, and you're out there, and you're breaking out of what? Oh man, it's awesome. And then you play the game, and it's these little squares, and it's slowly paced, and you know, and you're just like, this is so awesome. And it's because what you're seeing in your head is better than the game, or it augments the game. I shouldn't say it's better than the game, because the game is very, very good in and of itself, but it's good because it allows you to imagine as well. And I think that a lot of new games kind of just hand it out to you. It's like, oh, this is what you should see and imagine, you know, so there's no active thought participation from the player. So we wanted to do something where it was like simple gameplay, very easy to wrap your head around, and then let's take the backgrounds and the special effects and let's try to realize them on the screen as you used to see them in your head when you were a child. And of course, what you get out of that is you get super wacky stuff that people don't know what it is and they have to think about it. And everyone's got their own opinions of what's going on in the Bit Trip series. And I think that's wonderful because it's got people thinking. And that's kind of where we wanted to be.
Was there ever any consideration in the beginnings to do the game entirely in watercolors?
Ha, that would have been so rad. You know, at the very, very beginning, there was consideration given to making these games actually look like Atari 2600 games. And our artist looked at me and he was like, "Are you out of your mind? Like, nobody will buy that." And I was just kind of devastated. And I was like, "No, man, it's going to be so awesome." And he said, "No way. No." He put his foot down. And I'm glad he did. And our programmer, he put his foot down in a few different ways as well. And I think if I had my say, these games would be very different. Still probably pretty good. But maybe they wouldn't have gotten the following that they've gotten. And that's part of why I like working with a team. You get different perspectives lead to different outcomes. And it ends up being better than it ever would have been anyhow.
Right, right.
Yeah.
How about the ColecoVision? That was a little bit more advanced.
It was. And in fact, the ColecoVision, I think there's something about it where it's got a certain fidelity that is too advanced for me to consider an inspiration for this series.
I see.
Mind you, the ColecoVision is a great platform. You know, I still have one at home, and Ladybug on the ColecoVision is top notch. I go back to that game and play that often. But yeah, it's sort of, that's next gen.
It really was. Yeah, a Jumpman Jr. or something I could go back to. And, Arctic Adventure, the one with the penguin going in 3D, even back then. Arctic Adventure. Let's just talk about the series a little bit. And we start with Beat Trip.
You did it.
I did it again. Beat Trip Beat. And that, like you mentioned, has a Pongy type of feel going on. And the great thing about it is you tilt the controller. You brought the spinner knob.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of made that happening, that feel.
Yeah, we resurrected it. I'll tell you what, dude. I am so bummed that the spinner controller has died.
Mm.
There are so many more games that can be made in a genre that uses the spinner controller. Like, that used to be a staple of video games back in the heyday, like in the golden age of video gaming. Where has it gone? So I've always wanted to make a spinner game or a paddle game. And all of a sudden we found ourselves trying to make one, and we prototyped a bunch of different control schemes, and the Wii Remote just felt perfect.
Yeah.
So I see. So I'm really glad it worked out.
Of course, another very important element of the whole Beat Trip series is the integration of the audio and a soundtrack with the series. Now, I don't know where this came from. I'd like to know. But one of the first games I played that integrated the music with what I was doing was Rez.
Oh, yeah.
But Rez, to me, was not about like a retro 3D type of game. To me, Rez was like a playable adaption of those CG studio music releases at the time, the Mind's Eye and Beyond the Mind's Eye series.
Yeah.
And it also, and another game that really integrated the music was, I guess, Mittner's Tempest 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about playing with a spinner knob. I, of course, had to modify my Jaguar controller to have the spinner knob in, and what a different experience that is.
Does it work well?
It works fantastic. Yeah, it's just like, because you have to get the complete spinners from the Atari 2600, not the pots that stop at the end, the ones from the racing series.
Right.
And, of course, probably have to clean them up because they're a little bit dirty. And then that whole casing can mount right on the back of the Jaguar controller, and it's just like two or three solder points.
What?
And then you press the secret code on your controller that allows for this spinner knob to be attached to it, which he knew that he wanted people to play with this. And you can screw it right into the back of the controller. And then when you're holding the controller, your two buttons are right on your left hand, I believe. So you can grip them and control the zapper while you're spinning.
You are kidding me. You have to send me a link to this.
Okay.
Tempest 2000, we have it here in the office, and we did play a lot of it in, you know, sort of in the research phase for the Beat Trip series. It is one of my favorite games. I mean, Tempest is, if I were ever to get an arcade cabinet for the studio, it would have to be Tempest. I love that game so much. And playing it with a D-pad sucks.
Oh, yeah.
So And yet I do it because I want Tempest so badly.
You know? Right, sure, sure. Yeah, I had a big Tempest party release because when I got it, it was so impressive to me that I called a party that weekend just so we could all come over and have pizza and play Tempest. And we had it blasting. Awesome. So, and I blast your games as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, let's
talk. Thank you. I'm glad you do.
I think also, are they a distant cousin maybe of like the Rhythm Tengaku series at all?
Oh, maybe. You know, I could see that happening, or I could see that connection being made for sure. One of the big focuses of the BitTrip series, obviously, is the rhythm music integration. Mm-hmm. Parappa the Rapper changed my life and made me think of music in video games in a whole new way. Rez, of course, was also another huge inspiration. And when we set out to start the BitTrip series, we knew that a one-sided game of Pong was not enough of a hook for BitTrip Beat. And we also really were into this chip music genre of music where people are making music from old video game consoles and stuff. And so we married the two together and we got this rhythm music Pong. A lot of people have said it's Pong meets Rez, which is just so flattering to me because Rez is one of my favorite games ever. Mm. And yeah, so the musical aspects became very, very important, and that's carried through the whole series, and it will continue to carry through the remaining games in the series too. Not to jump ahead too much, but the story that we're telling is, is tied to sort of the rhythm of life, if you will, and music, and I think rhythm and beats, syncopation and melody, and all of that is a very, very important part of life, whether we realize it or not.
Oh, sure. And then in BitTrip Core, you had the moving four beams, and you move the beams around to where you want this laser to go. And I cannot, for the life of me, remember what game in the past I've played that was similar to this.
I can maybe take a couple guesses, see if it rings a bell.
Yeah.
Cosmic Arc.
That was it. That was it.
Is that it?
I believe, yeah. Yep.
So Cosmic Arc is one of my favorite 2600 games, not just because of the gameplay, although the gameplay is very good, but because of the theme. I think it's pretty funny. You're these aliens and you're abducting people and animals and stuff, and I think that's pretty cool. As we start each game, we try to look at inspiration in a lot of old classics to see how simple we can make the gameplay in each of our games, you know, and try to boil it down. Like, okay, what's the simplest thing we can do? And in BitTrip Core, the design at the beginning was a little bit more complex. And playing some of these old games like Cosmic Arc, and then even playing some new games like Guitar Hero, really helped steer us in the direction that BitTrip Core ended up in.
You said boiling down the gameplay, making it simple, but bringing an incredible challenge and the complexity that's going on behind it. Like, I mean, I could not imagine actually making a song out of all these hits. It's, I can't even fathom that process. It just seems so overly complex.
It's pretty wild. It's a different process in making games. It's certainly something I've never done before in my career, and it is a huge challenge for us. But we work with a fantastic composer and sound engineer at a company called Petrified Productions. We contract with them for all of our in-game music and sound effects, and the folks we work with there are just spot on. They help us out a lot, and I think that's important in a rhythm music series. You know, you need to have somebody strong doing that kind of stuff.
Sure. Also, BitTrip Void was next. Now, you build your void. I mean, when has this ever happened where you play the negative space of the game?
Yeah, and the game wasn't like that at first. It was super colorful, a lot of crazy stuff going on. You should see our concept art. if I remember, I'll try to send one over to you in an email. But at some point in the game, we realized it was just too busy visually. And our artist made everything black and white to kind of do some color value stuff. And we looked at it and we just thought, whoa, this is something special here. And then that's how it happened. And in fact, the theme of Void fits very well to the artistic style that we landed on, way better than it did with the colorful thing. And the theme is basically you're following Commander Video's story through all of these games, right? And in Void, he is learning what it means to expand his sort of his quote unquote void, like the space around you, the emotional space that everybody has, and you try different things and you have different experiences and they make you grow, and some of them are bad experiences and they make you shrink, you know, and it's this risk versus reward. How cocky do I want to be? Greedy? How big do I want to get? And all of that. And just turning it into this black void made it feel like something indescribable, which really is these feelings that you have as a human. You can't really describe that, but it still exists. So that's how we ended up there.
It's amazing that we've had a couple developers that develop the older school type of feel of games, and those seem to be the deepest thought out games. It's really something. As you whittle them down, you come to a more deeper core, if you will. And now, of course, a release of Bit Trip Runner, which really, we see Commander Video in action here. He really gets a going.
I think it's interesting because all the old games back when I was young, they were very high concept. And like you were just saying, where they, like some of these minimalist games are the most thought out. And I think that they kind of have to be because there's nothing else there. So it's like, I can't rely on gray aliens shooting at my gray space marines in gray environments that are hyper realistic and everyone's swearing and bleeding and shooting. You know, it's like, we don't have all of that to fall back on. You know, we've got some dots. So how can we make these dots compelling? Well, we can make a very interesting backstory there. And I think that people in the heyday of the arcades did that as well. You know, I remember Beanie Bopper on the Atari 2600. Like I'm an olive or an eyeball or whatever I am, shooting beams at propeller beanies and coat hangers and things. And it's like, oh my God, that's so awesome. You know, and it's very creative and exciting. And working our way up through this high concept stuff led to the sort of obvious next step, which is becoming a little bit more literal. And in Commander Video's growth as a human, it seemed like an obvious next step as well. So from the story aspect, so he's, you know, sort of he became in Bitrip Beat, whereas he was dead before, then he wasn't, kind of like I was at the beginning of the podcast when I was talking about that. Then in Core, he was basically built, I would say. He became physical. Then in Void, he became mentally aware. Now in Runner, he has to become a master of his environment. You know, we all do. Once we grow up and we master all of these things, we have to go out into the world and make something of ourselves. And so that's what Runner is all about. And we wanted to keep the retro style, of course. Old platformers were very precious and arguably better than new platformers, I would say. And so we wanted to keep this very simple vibe, but make it very frantic, really fast-paced, yet not super punishing. And I hope it feels that way. You can tell me since you've played it, but that's what we're going for with Runner, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a very nice balance, just challenging enough and definitely, you know, above the casual experience as well. But open, you know, very open, I believe. And you get the nostalgic feel as well. So it's everything. It runs the gamut of old to new games, and I think that's what all your titles do. Just one quick question. You worked for Activision a little bit. We see the radioactive gold bars in Bit Trip Runner. What were those radioactive turds in Keystone Caper?
Man, the radioactive turds in Keystone Caper, I think they were radioactive turds.
That's all I could come up with.
I mean, what is more scary than a radioactive turd? I would jump over that. You?
Yeah, because if I don't, it goes bong with a little bit of reverb on it. Now, you can find all of these titles in the Nintendo... I can't even remember the name of that.
Nintendo's, Wii Shop channel?
Yeah, the Wii Shop channel under the WiiWare section. But you have to look for Axis. What's that about?
Axis is our publisher.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, so they're all under Axis Games, or you can just search for Bit Trip by title, and you'll find all the games.
Okay,
fantastic. I would encourage people to start at the beginning with Bit Trip Beat, and move on from there. But at the same time, if more character-based adventure floats your boat, then maybe start with the most recent offering, which is BitTrip Runner.
Fantastic. Well, Alex, we'll have to have you back on to talk about WarioWare Do-It-Yourself and your exploration of that, and maybe even hit on your paper craft of Commander Video. Thank you so very much for joining us on We Talk Games. It's been a blast.
Great. Thank you very much. I'd love to be back on again.
Right on, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, that was a great interview and a great series. I really look forward to having him back on the show. Hey, let's open it up for Eric Alex. Big capital of Wisconsin. Eric Alex.
Wiggly.
Now, before we get started, Eric Alex, I know EA. Can I call you EA?